Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha vīryam karavāvahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu mā vidviṣāvahai. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 164, the six kinsmen. A son whom a damsel secretly bears in the house of her father, one shall name the son of an unmarried damsel, Kanina, and declare such offspring of an unmarried girl to belong to him who weds her afterwards. Right? So it doesn't matter who's the father, it's who she marries, then that will be the husband of the girl's son. Right, because the same principle is there, is that whoever is connected to the field, the son is theirs. Right, does that make sense? That's why it was always meant before. It's not the seed that matters. When ownership, it's not the seed, it's the field. Right, does that make sense? Mm. One marries, either knowingly or unknowingly, a pregnant bride, the child in the womb belongs to him who weds her, and is called a son received with the bride, Sahoda. Right? So it's not like this, devotees like to, you know, overly speculate, that then when the girl goes around the fire, then because the child went around the fire, then the man is also marrying the baby. You know, I mean, devotees come up with really wild stuff. Like that. So it has nothing to do with that. The point is that child's not supposed to be conceived out of wedlock. That's the whole point. Otherwise, the quality of the child, the consciousness, won't be very good. That's the problem.
Yes. Well, as I heard something about this seed and field, I heard there's an American genetics company. They're buying all the genetics codes for a thing, and then like changing them slightly, and then putting those seeds out. So then they're saying, you know, to get them like Monsanto, so that people are growing their stuff, you know, and then if their things are growing in their feet and somebody else's field, they can say, why have you got our stuff? You know what's not?
Yeah, but so the point is it's in their field, so it belongs to them. Yeah. So they're actually not right.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that in the modern speculative law that doesn't have the authority as a basis, then they may, you know, win there, but technically, why is it growing in their field? Mm-hmm. You know, seeds blow around, it blows in the field, you know, because a bird brings it there or something like that, and then they can claim it's like, you know. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I could take my newspaper, throw it on his lawn, and then sue him for stealing my newspaper. You know, it's that kind of stuff. It's just demoniac business tricks. The man buys a boy, whether equal or unequal, in good qualities. From his father and mother, for the sake of having a son, that child is called a son bought, kritika. So whether he's of equal nature or not, because the other ones you see in the 12 heirs, six heirs, then they should be of equal nature. Mm-hmm. But in here, whether he's equal or not, it's still he's in the second category of kinsmen. Mm-hmm. Right? Because here he's bought the boy, rather than he's paid money to the parents so that he can get him as his son. He'll be his adopted son, but he's still not the same as if the parents, out of affection, give the boy. That's a completely different kind of thing than the relationship's based on that affection. As opposed to, it's based on just, you know, out of desperation that he finds someone, if by giving them some money, then they'll give their son then. Right? So in other words, all these things are not that they're recommended. What Manu is talking about, all the possibilities that can happen, Right? Just like in marriage, there's 8 ways a marriage could happen. It's not that they're recommended. It's just saying this is the way it could happen. Does that make sense? So we always have to say, it's not that Mana's saying this is the way it should be done. You know, it's saying, oh, then it's okay to buy kids. No, his point is people do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? On the planet today, people are buying and selling children. So it's not that Manu's authorized. He's just saying what kind of child it'll be. What's the quality of it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If a woman abandoned by her husband or a widow of her own accord contracts a second marriage and bears a son, he is called the son of a remarried woman, Punarbhava. If she be still a virgin or one who returned to her first husband after leaving him, she is worthy to again perform with her second or first deserted husband the nuptial ceremony. Right? Because then there's the point is that only someone who's a virgin would do the full ceremony. Right? So if she was... Yeah. No, excuse me, she wouldn't be doing the full ceremony. But the point is that going back to her first husband, she's not marrying someone new. Right? She was married to her husband, she's left her husband, then she goes back to her husband. Right? So then she could perform the ceremony like that. So that would also indicate that there would be that kind of separation where the marriage contract is broken. Right? Though technically it's not, because one may say, no, but this and that. But now what happens? Now the lady dumps her husband or divorces her husband, right? So technically, according to the modern concept, they're free. There's no connection, right? Now what does that lady think if one of her good friends, you know, inner circle of friends starts to, develop a relationship with her ex? Technically, it doesn't matter. But does she mind?
Yes,
because technically it's her husband, it's her man to have dumped. So because she dumped it, no one else can take him up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So even in mentality, in the modern, so that still they're not separated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're separated, but they're not disconnected.
Yes.
Yeah. You understand?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's just the nature. But, you know, nobody likes to point those things out. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Like that.
So marriage just means that that person with lady with divorce, she can again remarry with the same person.
With the first husband, yeah, he needs to say something. Elizabeth Taylor did it, you know, so it works.
Anyway.
<Yeah.
laughs>
No. Yeah.
But how can it's possible to remarry in front of a fire?
No, but it says because she's still a virgin.
Ah, yes.
See, because only virgins can get married in front of the father. Yes. Now, if she was given away by the father, that part you can't do again. But she's still a virgin, so still that the rest of the ceremony can be done.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Even if she's marrying someone else, then the main part of the wedding can be done. You know, the lodge and the 7 steps and like that can be done. But the rest of it's not done. Right? It means for us, the Vaishnav Homa, that's always done.
And she's not a virgin.
No, then it wouldn't be done. Like that. Does that make sense? If it's never been done, then it could be done. But the point is you can't redo things that are already done. If she's already been given away, that part's not done again. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So let's say the girl has... Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, in other words, she's, let's say, gotten married before being a devotee or something, right? So she's had a different kind of wedding. So then if she gets married as a devotee, then she could have the Vedic ceremony.
Yes.
Right? But she's already been given away, so that part won't be done. You know what I'm saying? Now, if she's a virgin, then you can do the whole rest of it. If she's not a virgin, then the part where you're receiving the girl from the fire, that you wouldn't do. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of it's practical. It's just what's already been done is not done again. But the part of the puffed rice and the fire, going around the fire, the 7 steps, that's the main part of the wedding. That's always done, you know, whenever there's a marriage. Does that make sense? He who, having lost his parents or being abandoned by them without just cause, gives himself to a man is called a son, self-given, swayam datta. Right? So he doesn't have anyone, but he just goes to the person and says, you know, I can be your son. The son whom a Brahmin begets through lust on a Shudra female is though alive, parayan, a corpse, sava, and hence called parasava, a living corpse. Right? Because he's technically a nishada, so it's not a good mentality. Because you'll have the mentality to, you know, the nature of the Brahminical, but the application of a Shudra, that's very dangerous. You know what I'm saying? To have a Brahmin brain and a Shudra kind of nature, that's not good.
So he would be prone to do exactly what got him made.
Yeah, so it just means he would, it's not good.
No.
That's what the saying comes from, if he had brains, he'd be dangerous?
Yeah, but the thing is he has brains, that's why he's dangerous. Right. We always heard it, if you had half a brain, you'd be dangerous. I guess maybe standards are going up. Or either the quality of brain is less, because before half a brain would cause trouble, now you need a full brain to cause trouble.
Maybe it's an Irish thing.
Could be. I mean, it means a full brain or half a brain?
Yeah, full brain.
But I would expect it's probably an Irish thing in general, because the large group of Irish, then they settled in that kind of northern aspect of the southern part of America.
Yeah.
So the saying's from that part of America.
Yeah.
So most likely it is an Irish saying. A son who is begotten by a Shudra on a female servant, or on the female servant of his slave, may, if permitted by his father, take a share of the inheritance. Thus the law is settled. Because right? I think he's outside of the six. Right? One, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah, no, this is outside. So this is just bringing the point because it's brought up about the Shudras. So here, a son is begotten by a Shudra on a female servant, or on the female servant of a slave, because there's technically no difference. Because the Shudra is there, his servant, female servant, is a Shudra. Mm-hmm. Or the female servant of his slave is still a Shudra. Right? Mm-hmm. Here's the fun part. Here, slaves, they may have servants.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
No, you understand what a slave means. A slave means that you owe him money or something, so there's no way you can pay it. So you stay with him and work for free for however long it would take to actually pay that back. So you're a slave, meaning you're working for no money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but you're dealt with in a proper fashion. Mm-hmm. It's not like the modern concept of slaves. Here it just means that you're going to work for no money.
Yeah.
Like that. So you understand? So if the guy's a nice guy, he may deal more nicely. He's not a nice guy, he may deal less nicely. Yeah. Right? But there's rules on how not nice you can be. You know, so you can't be, you understand? So the point is here, a Shudra with a Shudra, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter that they're in a subservient position, they're still a Shudra. Right? Because he's a Shudra, he's working for somebody. And so just because this person happens to be working for him, doesn't make them, they're both doing their duty as a Shudra, so they're equal. Therefore, that he may, if permitted by the father, take a share of the inheritance.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Like that. So that's the thing. But these other six before that, they are just taken care of by those who do inherit. You know what I'm saying? Now, if there is, it'll be mentioned. Okay, avoiding a failure, heirs. These 11, the son begotten on the wife, and the rest are enumerated above. The wife's called substitutes for a son. In other words, the son of one's own body, that's considered the son. Mm. You know, when you're talking about heir, because that would be first. Now, any of the other 11, they're a substitute, right? Taken in order to prevent a failure of the funeral ceremonies, right? So in other words, then it would be then number two, then not, that's not available, three, four. So even the number 12 is okay if there's no the previous 11.
Yeah.
Yes.
Martin, in the previous book 179, where it says might be committed by his father. Who is the father being referred to? Like, who is the owner?
Is the Shudra.
So it's the female servant is possessed by the Shudra?
It means he would be connected with there, but if he's the servant of his slave, then the child belongs to that slave. Because the point is the slave is a temporary thing. It's not a permanent thing. Right? You know, but it depends on how much you owe him. It may be take longer. You know, like that. But the point is you are your own man, but you happen to be working for him to pay off that debt. Right? So it's not permanent. Even in means that this the Western kind of thing that they brought up from the African slave trade. Even in Africa, there's no such thing as permanent slave. It's the same thing. You owe a debt, or there was a war and they captured you, or this and that. So there's an amount of time, and then you're not a slave anymore. Right? Does that make sense? Or even if it's you are for your lifetime, your children aren't. You know, so there's methods that it gets. So it's not a permanent thing. It's not, the Westerners took advantage of that and then took them and just are permanently slaves. But it wouldn't be like that, you know, because it wouldn't carry on to the next generation. And even within the generation, once that debt's paid, then they're no longer in that position.
In this situation where he's talking about the servant, female servant, or servant of a slave, if she were to have a husband, then the child would be considered his?
Yeah, well, that's what he's saying, is the slave of his slave means the servant of his slave. So if the slave's a man, and then it would belong to her. But if she has a husband, the point is that in this case, because it's all amongst equals, technically, all that is this socially a little bit up and down, but by nature they're all equal. Therefore, he's qualified to inherit. Because the point is that the more it's equal, nature, then they're more qualified. And the less the nature, then the less qualified. So, but it permitted, because it may be that there's, you know, other sons or that, so then he would be more of a kinsman. But it may be he's, you know.
He's the only option there.
Only option, or it may be that he's part of the, as accepted as part of the family, so he would just share like the others. So there wouldn't be so much of an order there. Does that make sense? Though the Aurasa would still apply. His own son would be considered better. Right. But so the making a distinction between the Brahmin begetting a son on the Shudra female and the Shudra begetting a son on the Shudra female. Because for the Brahmin, he's created a new species. But for the Shudra, it's not. It's just another Shudra. Does that make sense? Okay. If among brothers sprung from one father, one have a son, Manu has declared them all to have male offspring through that son. Because the point is the funeral ceremony is being performed. So even if all the brothers have, okay, so all of them are performing, but if even one of them has, he'll perform for everybody. Right? So then they don't have to worry. It's not an anxiety. He's God now, what about these guys? No, it's all connected. On failure of each better son, each next inferior one is worthy of the inheritance, right? So it says, is worthy. So it means that if they're the one, they're fully qualified, right? It's just a matter of the quality, because the point is the son who is born, he's going to have more of the, mood to actually do the ceremony and see that his son does the ceremony. Right, because when you're doing the ceremony, it's for your father, your grandfather, great-grandfather. Right, does that make sense? So if the more that there's that connection, of either bodily connection or affectionate connection, there's more of a chance it will carry on. Well, someone who just, he didn't have any place, he came, moved into the house, so he's dealt like a son, there may or may not be great affection there. So he may or may not be inclined. Does that make sense? That's why there's a distinction here. It's not that, does that make sense?
Yes.
Right, because of that element. It's not that there's necessarily a great distinction in the way of how good or not good they can. So you could have a son of your own body that you don't have a good relationship with, but an adopted one you could have a great relationship. But it's just showing the natural form, because we're dealing with the funeral ceremony, right? So there's that mundane aspect. Right? Does that make sense? On failure, okay. On failure of each better son, each next inferior one is worthy of the inheritance. But if there be many of equal rank, they shall all share the estate. Right? So in other words, if there's an order, then it goes to whoever's the senior. But if there's many of the same nature, or the same position, then it will be divided amongst them. Right? Does that make sense? So all these are so that you... Because what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with the law of inheritance, because people fight over this.
Yes.
So why are they fighting? Because of the mundane consideration. So because of that, so because it's a mundane consideration, here are the mundane rules. Right? Does that make sense? Right? But if there's no mundane consideration, then these rules aren't important.
Isn't Manu in some way mundane?
Yes, but so is marriage.
Yeah. I was wondering if you were highlighting that these were mundane. But yeah.
No. The point is it's apara vidya.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's the best material situation to connect to the Lord. That's all. So for those who worry about these things, these are the rules. For those who don't worry about these things, you mean there is no need of shrug or write this back. You don't have to worry about it. Means one is just so you understand the difference here, but two is going through this is so that I'm just really, really tired of hearing devotees say that, you know, oh, but Prabhupada's given us so much rules. He's just given the essential points that connect directly with devotional service, as you know, Vaishnava Das Babaji and them are recommending. Right? It's just, in other words, the nitya rules. That's all he's given us. He didn't give us the naimittic. It's because devotees aren't satisfied with the nitya, therefore naimittic elements are being given, but they're supposed to be used as nitya. So therefore the whole varnashram and the other aspects. But as you can see, is, you know, as we go through this, you know, we catch a few verses from each page, because that's most of it has been cut out. Right? And even what's left, you know, that could be considered, even most of that is not so important. So there's no such thing as, you know, ISKCON is so ritualistic. There's no such thing as anybody who says that doesn't know what ritual is. That's all. And doesn't understand actually what nitya means. Okay. Inheritance. Not brothers nor fathers, but sons take the paternal estate. Right? Because the brothers, it's not his obligation to do his brother's funeral ceremony. Because the point is the inheritance and the funeral ceremony go together. Right? So that's why for devotees, inheritance isn't actually an important element, because there's no funeral ceremony. You know what I'm saying? So this thing that devotees know, I get the house and I have to be able to hand it down to my son and keep on, that's all bogus. If you want to do that, these are the rules. But it's not necessary for devotees. So that kind of, possession is not necessary. Right? But the father shall take the inheritance of a son who leaves no male issue, and his brothers. Right? In other words, if the son has no son, but he dies, then his property goes back to the father. Right? Because then there may be some other son or something, then when he dies, it'll go to whoever it is there. Always to that relative within 3 degrees, who is nearest to the deceased, Sapinda, the estate shall belong. Afterwards, the Sakulya shall be the heir, then the spiritual teacher or the pupil. Right? So, in other words, within 3 degrees. So if the son dies, but you know, father's there, okay, but if the father then son, then it goes back to the grandfather, or from grandfather to grandson, or you know, like this. And so in other words, within 3 degrees. Now if there's somebody in the family of that, then it goes there. If it's not, then it will go to the nearest Sapinda, right? It means in other words, or it means that was the Sapinda, who's the same. So cool, you're just to the same group. Right? So then someone within that community. You know, depending on how close or like this, then it would go there. If it's not, then it'll go to the spiritual master, or go to, if he himself is a teacher, it'll go to his student. Right? So in this way, it's that. And if none of these are there, then on failure of all heirs, Brahman shall share the estate. right? So then it'll be given to the Brahmins, who are versed in the three Vedas. So not just anybody, but so qualified Brahmins. Pure and self-controlled, thus the law is not violated. Right? And yeah. So in other words, it doesn't go to the king. The king will then see it's distributed to qualified Brahmins. The property of a Brahmin must never be taken by the king. That is a settled rule, right? If it's not, then it may be taken there, but then it's arranged, so the king will take it and then distribute it. But the property of men of other castes, the king may take on the failure of all heirs, right? That's the other thing. So the Brahmins will always go to Brahmins. But if it's not a Brahmin, he may take that estate and it may be used for government purpose. Right? Does that make sense? So that means he may be then giving in charity. He gets the benefit for having given it, right? It's a Brahmin's estate. There's no one qualified. He gives it to the Brahmins. He's only doing his duty as a Kshatriya to see that the Brahmins got it. Right? So he gets the benefit of doing his duty, but not of the charity. Right? But if it's not a Brahmin, the state may take the land, right? Because there is no heir. So therefore, then now if he gives that to Brahmins, he gets the benefit of having given in charity. Or it may be used for, you know, some government officer or whatever it is that, you know, the government thinks it should be used. Does that make sense?
Maharaj,
one thing.
Devotee's parents expires and property is there. So what is the duty of devotee? He will do this rites and the property will be...
It means he'll do the rites, means as we do the rites. But it's not that every year you have to do the whole thing like that. They'll do that one time, you have the kirtan, give the shad and stuff like that.
And the property goes for his spiritual master or what do you
mean? No, they go to the son.
The devotee?
Yeah.
He's a brahmachari, he's in the temple and...
Then he can do what he wants. You know, he can give it to the temple or, you know, like that. Or generally what happens if there's that kind of thing, then he would, you know, generally get married and then use the property. Like that. But if that's not an option, then, you know, they figure out what to do. But if two sons begotten by two different men contend for the property in the hands of their mother, each shall take to the exclusion of the other what belonged to his father. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, what's in the hands of the mother, he'll take the estate that belonged to the father. They can't contend because it's connected to the mother, therefore they get the other estate also. So in other words, that's where it says that the normal thing is it goes back to one place. That's why you don't want to have two fathers. You might have two mothers, but not two fathers. Right? Because then the problem is then you're going to have who gets what. So then it goes to the exclusion of the others, that whatever was his father's stuff, then he would be connected with that inheritance, and this one would be connected with his father. But they're not connected just because the mother is the same. Does that make sense? In other words, otherwise, if there's two here and one was the superior son, then he would get the estate and would take care of the other one as a kinsman. Unless he's someone who had inheritance, then he gets something superior. But if they're fighting over it, then fine, they just go back to whoever their fathers are. So. Okay, the maternal estate. But when the mother has died, all the uterine brothers and the uterine sisters shall equally divide the mother's estate. Right? This is the case if there are no unmarried daughters. In the case where there are unmarried daughters, and then an earlier verse directs, but whatever may be the separate property of the mother, that is the share of the unmarried daughters alone. Right? So in other words, the mother's there. If there's unmarried daughters, it goes to them alone, and that's it. It's not shared with anybody else. But if all the daughters are married, then it will be divided up amongst all the sons and all the daughters. Like that. You understand? It's a different kind of consideration. Even to the daughters of those daughters, something should be given, as it is seemingly out of the state of the maternal grandmother on the score of affection. Right? So it's not just, okay, they're the daughters, but something would also go to the granddaughters. So they just, in other words, you're dealing here, when it's the mother's estate, then it's a matter of affection. Right? In other words, she's a lady, so her property goes to a lady. So if she, the unmarried daughter, she would get that. Right? But if it's a matter of everybody's married, then it's a matter of out of affection, then all the children get, and all the grandchildren would get. So it's just divided up nicely, especially if it's something that, you know, was dear to one person or another, then you see that they get those things. It's not a matter of just this is wealth and dividing it up. That's the father's estate. Mm. The mother's estate is more this consideration of affection. Mm-hmm. The sixfold property of women. What was given before the nuptial fire? What was given on the bridal procession? What was given in token of love? And what is received from her brother, mother, or father? That is called the sixfold property of a woman. Such property, as well as a gift subsequent and what was given to her by her affectionate husband, should go to her offspring, even if she dies in the lifetime of her husband. In other words, it doesn't go to the husband, it goes to the offspring. Right? So if the unmarried daughter, it all goes to her. If it's not, they're married or there isn't any, then it's just divided amongst the children. But it doesn't go to the husband, because that's the property of women. Right? Does that make sense? It is ordained that the property of a woman married, according to the Brahma, the Daiva, the Arsha, and the Gandharva, or the Prajapatya rite, shall belong to her husband alone, if she dies without issue. Right? So Brahma, Daiva, Arsha, Gandharva, and Prajapatya. Okay. So then if she dies and there are no children, so then it goes to the husband, if it's these rites. But it is prescribed that the property which may have been given to a wife on an asura marriage, or one of the other blameable marriage, shall go to her mother and to her father if she dies without issue. Right? So in other words, if it's a paisach, if it's asura or rakshasa, then it would go back to her parents. Does that make sense? Because those aren't considered, you know, great arrangements. Women should never make a hoard from the property of their families, which is common to many, nor from their own husband's particular property without permission. Right? A hoard, in other words, you're just keeping so much that you're getting from here. You just be careful. You're not just hoarding. Because the whole idea is that things should be dynamic. You're talking about, you know, security in that. So there is a rule that one quarter is kept for that. But beyond that, then it's only with permission that you should actually. Especially if it's there's common, right? It means if you have so many brothers living together, it's not that the elder brother's wife will keep more and different things like that. Does this make sense? Okay. The ornaments which may have been worn by women during their husband's lifetime, his heirs shall not divide. Those who divide them become outcasts. But in other words, the mother's ornaments. His heirs don't take. Husband's sons or grandsons who are not the woman's children shall not have no share in these ornaments. Right? So it's only her children will get. The husband may have more children, but they'll only go to her children. Does that make sense?
So it's not, I mean, it's not that it can't be divided, it has to be given in one pile or anything. It's just that the father's children can't.
Yeah, that's what it means. They can't divide. They can't say, well, we're also children of a father, so therefore, no, they have rights in their fathers, but not in the mothers. Right? Especially if it's not their mother. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, let's say if there's children that are, you know, from different marriages, then the woman's property goes to her own children. You know what I'm saying? If she has no children and it's a proper marriage, then it goes to the husband. Then, because now it's his property, then it will go to the children. Okay. Does that make sense?
But now, so the ornament that the mother had can be given to different of her own children.
That's if there's no unmarried girls. If there's unmarried girls, her property goes to the unmarried girls. If there aren't any, then it goes to her children. It's divided equally amongst all the children. If there are no children, then it goes back to the husband. Right. But if it's, you know, one of these wild marriages, then it goes. But nowadays you don't have that, really. But still, sometimes you might find that. Is it? Those disqualified from inheritance. Eunuchs and outcasts, person born blind or deaf, the insane, idiots and the dumb, as well as those deficient in any organ of action or sensation, receive no share. So that means they're kinsmen, so they're taken care of, because otherwise much of the time they wouldn't be able to manage the things properly. So because of that, if they get a share, they may lose it. So the idea is that they're taken care of properly. Yes. Right? The others would have the share, and then they would take care of them. But it is just that a man who knows the law should give even to all of them food and cloth.
How about the riti? Was it riti?
Yeah, well, it means it's the same point.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, she can arrange it like that, but we're talking about she's dead. So unless she said beforehand that she wants to see that all of them get, then that's fine. The point is that it's not automatic because it was the mother's, therefore the sons and all that can take it. No. It means the first option is it goes to the unmarried girls. If there aren't unmarried girls, then it goes to all of her, only her children. But then if she wants it to be beyond that, then it can be. That's fine. But it's not automatic that they can say, no, we get a share because it's, you know.
Were there any circumstances where someone might write a will to override, you know, mama's law if they had a special consideration?
But then what would be the point? You know what I'm saying? Because if it's not according to
vendetta
against, but if it's not against, if it's not according to law, then how would it be upheld? Because it has to be according to law.
Right.
Because just like Manu mentions, even though this may not, how do you say, this will go against an aspect of Western, how you say, storyline. But the request of someone at the time of death is not considered something that is legally binding. Right? Because at the time of death, it's not necessarily they're in their best consciousness. So who they may say all kinds of insane things. You know? That, you know, me, not insane meaning that's clinically crazy, but it's just not practical.
Yeah.
Or it's not actually according to the way it should be. They just got sentimental in a particular way. So it's not actually the way it should be. So even in the modern scenario, you have the thing, if, you know, you said, you know, carry on to this and that, something noble so everyone agrees with it, then it's considered great, he's doing this because his father, you know, like that. But much of the time you have the father wants this, and but according to the natural law it would be that, and so there's going to be contention. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't matter if there's a natural law. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So the point is the will should be according to the law. You know, unless there's something he can show that somebody doesn't deserve or something. So it may be the eldest son, but he's not properly behaved. So it goes to the next son who is properly behaved. You know, but then it has to be established according to that principle.
So there were written documents sometimes?
Not that I know of.
Oh, really?
I mean, I don't know, because here it's all very clearly done, so.
But in such a case that you just mentioned, like the elder son is not properly behaved.
Yeah, but then that's the rule, is it has to be someone if he's properly behaved. If not, he gets a share. But he doesn't get a bigger share because he's the eldest. Or he wouldn't lead the family, but he'd be a kinsman. So whoever could lead the family would do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was how the whole issue opened, actually, I think.
Okay. command in the case of a dispute, this would come before the king to decide?
Yes, it means that's why it's discussed here, because the king would have to deal with it. But because the law is there, it's just natural, and then the families, educated families or communities, would know how this works. So generally, amongst the families and the Brahmins, you could take care of this. Okay, if the eldest brother behaves as an eldest brother ought to, he must be treated as, like a mother and a father. But if he behaves in a manner unworthy of an eldest brother, he should yet be honored like a kinsman. Mm-hmm. You know, so then they just drop into the, you know, it's just like everybody else. So there's no special consideration if he's older. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, of course, there would be the thing, because now you have that, and so that's how the law works. So then the will would be how you'd function. But the point is that these are the considerations, because these are the natural ways the mentalities work, like that. People may be in an irreligious mood, try to go against these, but this is the natural flow. You know what I'm saying? Because of the nature of either relation with father or with the mother, you know, or sons or daughters, because there's different natures, so that these laws then accommodate. But it is just that a man who knows the law should give even to all of them food and cloth without stint, according to his ability. He who gives it not will become an outcast. So in other words, all the, brothers and sisters who aren't qualified, can't behave or can't deal properly with it, they should be all taken care of properly. Like that. You know, according to his ability, right? If he doesn't have much, he takes care simply. He has more, he takes care very nicely. If the eunuch and the rest should somehow or another desire to take wives, the offspring of such among them as have children is worthy of a share. Like that. So in other words, if they do get married, then their child, then they'll get a share, right? As long as they're also not crazy or something. Property of brothers. Whatever property the eldest son acquires by his own exertion, after his father's death, a share of that shall belong to his younger brothers, provided they have made a due progress in learning. Right? This is referring to the property that's acquired by using the capital of the father's estate. The younger brothers being referred to are those who are unmarried and engaged in study. So in other words, if they're old enough, they're all married, then it's not that they get anything from there. But the point is the younger ones who are still studying in the Gurukul, then he's taken the estate and he's increased it, so they'll still get their share, right? But it'll include not just what was there, but the share that he's made from that. But if they're married, it's just what's the original breaking up of the estate, right? It's not that they get what he's produced. But if all of them, being unlearned, acquire property by their labor, the division of that shall be equal. As it is not properly acquired by the father, that is the property acquired by the father, that is the settled rule. Property acquired by learning belongs solely to him who it was given. Right, means, so, likewise, the gift of a friend, a present received on marriage or with the honey mixture. In other words, one can say, we're talking now about the property of brothers who are living together. Right? And so there's some connection. But these kind of things, if they're given, they belong to just who it was given to. Right? Through learning, he's done some teaching, and so therefore the disciple has given him something as a dakshin. It belongs to only him. He doesn't have to share that. Right? It's not that property of the father is there. They're all working with that, and so therefore there's some sharing of the benefits. Right? Or what was given to him at his marriage. It's his. It's not a matter of you have to share. But if one of the brothers, being able to maintain himself by his own occupation, does not desire a share of the family property, he may be made separate by the others, receiving a trifle out of his share to live upon. Like, so if somebody wants to go separately, he doesn't want to be part of that scene, then they'll give something out of like that, but it doesn't. He doesn't take the share. He'll give something like that. But then he lives separately, and then whatever he does is his own, like that. And so then the considerations are only those who are living together. Then that whatever is developed, then there may be consideration of sharing. You know, does that make sense? There's a family business, the older brother is managing it, so then they all get benefit. Mm-hmm. Not that he says, I'm managing the business, so he gets all that, and then just gives, they just get their little bit of something.
It seems that in the past, it was a lot of joint family we are living.
Yeah. Because it mentioned not being living as a joint family was only as a spiritual consideration, that they would be doing, you know, instead of one yajna amongst five brothers, they'd be doing five yajnas. Yes. And so only for that consideration was splitting up considered worthwhile. But if they were not, they were just as a family living in, you know, just that normal way, then it's recommended they stay together. Because then it's more strong. You have more relatives, more there. If somebody gets sick, everybody else is still there to take care. You know, that kind of a thing. What one brother may acquire by his labor without using the patrimony, that acquisition made solely by his own effort, he shall not share unless by his own will with his brothers. Right? In other words, he's gotten money not from the inheritance. And by taking that money, he's increased it and made facility. He doesn't have to share that, unless he wants to. Right? But if it comes from the father's inheritance, and from that they're developing it, then that's what's shared. But if a father recovers lost... But if the father recovers lost ancestral property, he shall not divide it, unless by his own will, with his sons. For it is self-acquired property. Of course, once he dies, then it goes into something. But if brothers, once divided and living again together as co-parsoners?
Yes.
Co-parsoners.
I did look it up a few weeks ago. But at the moment it's eluding me.
The parsoners means like parcels or something. They all have a parcel, co-parsoning of the parcel.
It has a specific meaning.
Okay. So make a second partition. The division shall in that case be equal, right? Because in the first one, then the elder brother can get a bigger share, right? Because he's going to lead the family together. Now if they break up, they go back together, and then they break up again, he can't claim that he's the eldest, and then it's equal share, right? If the eldest or the youngest brother is deprived of his share, or if either of them dies, his share is not lost to his immediate heirs. Right? So in other words, if they didn't give the share to the eldest or youngest brother, his children still deserve that share. Yeah. So they can still fight for that. If somehow or another they cheated him out of it, or he wasn't there or something, he can still get it. Mm-hmm. His uterine brothers, having assembled together, shall equally divide it, and those brothers who were united with him, and the uterine sisters. Okay, so that's just, An eldest brother, who through avarice may defraud the younger ones, shall no longer hold the position of the eldest, shall not receive an eldest son's additional share, and shall be punished by the king. Right? So it's just... You're not supposed to take advantage. All brothers who habitually commit forbidden acts are unworthy of a share of the property, and the eldest shall not make anything his separate property without giving an equivalent to his younger brothers. Right? So in other words, if there's a brother who is unqualified to get inheritance, it's not that that share that would go to him then would go to that unqualified brother would therefore be kept by the eldest because he's managing the estate. No, it would be shared amongst them all. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, there's the overall property. He gets a bigger share of that than the others. But whatever's that share of the other, that would be divided equally. It's not, he can't, in other words, this right of, what is it? what's it called?
Primogeniture.
Yeah. He can't keep using that again and again. It's used once. If undivided brethren living with their father together make an exertion for gain, the father shall on no account give them unequal shares on a division of the state. Right? So here then it would imply that the father also has something to say how it's going to be divided up. You know? So then the point of will appears to be that there is some. So in other words, the father's estate, you know, there's the family business, they're all working at it, and they're all working hard and developing like that. He can't then favor one and give him more and the others less. No, then it has to be equal. But a son born after partition shall alone take the property of his father. Or if any of the other sons be reunited with the father, he shall share with them. Okay, so here is that if he divides, this also is considered, if he divides the estate before his death, right? So then whatever is the father's share, because the other sons have already gotten. But now if another son is born after this has happened, right? Then whatever was the father's share, whatever he kept, that will go to that son, right? Because he can't redivide the other stuff again.
Right? After the father leave his body.
Yes, yes. Okay, now if the father's there, he's divided the estate, but then someone come back with the father, then that son born after that, and anybody who rejoined, then it will be shared amongst them. Yes. Right? So in other words, whoever's dependent upon the father, then whatever's his share, that's what they would divide. Yes.
So where it says he comes back to the father, that means he gives that share back and the father's again looking after him? Father takes charge of
it? It could be that just come back and become, because if you're a dependent, then whatever you have belongs to whoever's in charge. So I guess it would mean, but you'd also have to consider if they had their particular facility, that would stay. So it's just what would be extra of the father's, that would be a consideration.
Right. So if they go bankrupt and come crawling back, then once again they're eligible for inheritance.
Yeah, but it would more be as a matter of, you know, the part of the father's seemings. In other words, the father's in charge then. Mm. But if it's just they're calling back and want a handout, then that's not necessarily. No. The point is they're coming and then therefore working under the father. Yeah. So that means whatever they get under the father means technically belongs to the father. And then he takes care of them. Mm. Just like if they're working as a joint family and the eldest brother, so they all work together, and so he takes care of them all. Right? So does that make sense? You know, except for those points, the things that they get on their own, from a marriage, from a gift of learning, or you know, out of friendship, someone gives like that. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. But so that's on ashram side. But whatever comes from the varna side, from their occupation, that then would be shared. Mm. Okay, miscellaneous rules. A mother shall obtain the inheritance of a son who dies without leaving issue. And if the mother be dead, the paternal grandmother shall take the estate. Right, so therefore the son, it goes back to the mother, not goes back to the father. As much of the time, then, you know, father's not there anyway, so it goes back to the mother. And if, after all the debts and assets have been duly distributed according to the rule, any property be afterwards discovered, one must divide it equally. A dress, a vehicle, ornaments, cooked food, water, female servants, property destined for pious uses or sacrifices, and a pasturing ground, they declare to be indivisible. Right? You know, you don't take the car apart, you know, this one gets the hubcap, this one gets the steering wheel, you know, like that. Does that make sense? It means they come as a group. So the pasturing ground is one thing, the car is another thing. You can't divide them up like that. Yeah.
Does pasture ground include land for agriculture?
I would expect, but pasture and ground is if you divide it up, where's the cow going to eat? So, you know, it goes together. Because in other words, you need a certain amount of land to take care of the cows. So that land can't be divided because that goes with the cows. So it means technically you would get the cows and that land. Okay, division of property that has been thus been declared. The division of the property and the rules for allotting shares to the several sons, those begotten on a wife and the rest, in due order, have been thus declared to you. Hear now the laws concerning gambling. Okay. Everyone woke up now?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so now this is legal title 18, that was 17. So there's only 18, so this is mortal sins.
Yeah.
So in other words, the other is like standard stuff. You know, standard civil, you know, standard criminal. So the criminal stuff was not supposed to be there. Right? So if that's, it means, in other words, domestic and civil, those are just normal that are going to go on and people, according to their attachments, are going to behave nicely or not. Right? So the criminal cases, like, you know, thievery, robbery, assault.
Defaming,
these things shouldn't happen. So if the king can get rid of these, then his kingdom will go nicely because everybody's peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Now these are considered worse stuff,
yeah.
Right? It means the other things, it happens, but it shouldn't be there. That's bad. But this is worse than bad.
This should really not happen.
Yeah, because this just really corrupts everything. Okay. Gambling and betting defined. Gambling and betting let the king exclude from his realm. Those two vices cause the destruction of the kingdoms of princes, right? Rather than the government actually opens up casinos and gets tax off of them.
I met one of the gentlemen, he has a legal house, and I asked him, don't you think about changing business? He was interested to talk about prostitution. Then he said, no, now it's like this, there's a lottery, and if you win, you can get a wine house in Bengal.
In Bengal.
Yeah, so if you win in the lottery, then you can open a liquor house, and he had one, so he was not considering to give
it. Oh, give it up. Okay, gambling and betting amount to open theft. So that's why it is. So as the other is theft that is unseen, is quiet, while this is open. The king shall always exert himself to suppress both of them. When inanimate things are used for staking money on them, that is called amongst men gambling, yuta. And when animate beings are used for the same purpose, one must know that to be betting.
Mm.
Right? That's samavaya. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Means if it's inanimate, then it's gambling. And if it's bet, you know, like horses or, you know, dogs, this, that, whatever it is, fighting, wrestling, that's betting. But it's the same thing because you're putting up money on what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. You understand? So it's the same thing, but just one is inanimate, one is animate. Right? Isn't that far, it's such a clear definition.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You know. Controlling secret thieves. Let the king corporally punish all those persons who either gamble and bet or afford an opportunity for it. Likewise, shooters who assume the distinctive marks of twice born men. Right? In other words, those who cheat should be controlled. Gamblers, dancers, and singers, cruel men, men belonging to a heretical sect, those following forbidden occupations, and sellers of spirituous liquor, let him instantly banish from his town. Right? So this doesn't mean dancers and singers that there aren't in any realm. This just means the street ones.
Mm.
Because the problem with the street ones is, because one may say, well, what's the problem with that? The thing is the dancers and singers in the street, they kind of move around as they please. You know, so if they walk into your house, you just say, hey, what are you doing here? Oh, I just came to see if you wanted some.
Mm.
But actually the problem is they're used by thieves, or they're thieves themselves, so they use it to actually check out places to steal. So that's why street singers and dancers means they make their occupation by singing and dancing in the street aren't allowed to be there.
Mm.
Means if they're performing professionals to perform in, you know, ceremonies or in theaters, that's fine. Because they have their place, you're going there. But when they go around, then they can go out, they can watch everything. It means if they're out in the street every day watching everything and watching your movements, how you go and this and that and how it works, no one's going to notice, right? So then, you know, thievery goes on and then they disappear. So the tendency is these kind of persons are connected with, you know, bigger kind of, how you say, criminal activities. Right, so your street gamblers, your means even not, but your gamblers, your dancers, your singers, these kind of persons aren't supposed to be there. Heretical sect, they just make up their own thing. They shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know if we've covered this already, but isn't it a fact that kshatriyas are given some allowance gambling?
But that's amongst themselves.
Right.
But that's not as an occupation. That's just for passing the time for fun. The gamblers are ones who, that's how they make their money, right? And then persons who aren't, you know, necessarily they make money in an honest way, but then they become distracted by these gamblers, by the opportunity that maybe they'll make more money, right? Because that's the idea, is that you just put a coin in the machine and then you can bring, you know, win millions. But the point is how often does that happen? You know, enough that people keep doing it, but the point is you have thousands of people putting coins in the machine, so how much is going in? So it's a business, so the house will always win. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that shouldn't be there, because then you're taking away people's hard-earned money, because they have this, they're not trained enough that they won't become overwhelmed by their own greed. Right? So that's why those who sell the liquor, like, and they sometimes it's not an uncommon thing that these big
drinks.
Yeah, mining operations or big kind of labor kind of things, that on the day when they give them the money, they actually have liquor shops, you know, that just that are open on that day across the street. So when they walk out, they just go spend their money on liquor, and you get all your money back. Yes.
So we've like stocks.
It depends upon how it means. Depends upon if you know what you're doing or not. Just like, let's say you buy something as a businessman to sell. It's no guarantee it will sell. Mm-hmm. But you understand the principle of how it works. And you have an educated idea that there is a market for these goods, so if I buy them and I can sell them for more than what I bought them for, I make money. You know what I'm saying?
Reasoning, and when you're not doing it whimsically.
In other words, if you're a technical trader, then it's not gambling. You understand? If you're just the guy that looks in the magazine and they say, hey, this stock's going up, this looks like good buy, and then you go out and buy, then you're the ones that the technical traders make money off of. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's just it's a regular business. You just have to know the technique of how it works. So it takes a lot of training to be able to. Because in a normal thing, you should, you know, 40% of what your thing should make profit, like that. And that's just a regular kind of thing. So you can, but the thing is, you really have to know what you're doing. Like that. The problem is that one gets the anxiety of not sticking to your plan. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, you'd have to be educated and self-controlled. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like any business. You don't control your senses, then you don't stick to the plan, then you lose money. So it's the same thing, just it's a little bit more delicate. You know, especially if you're working on, you know, 2-minute cycles or something, you know, then. does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, if that's the direction you want to go, but just know what you're doing. Does that make sense? Don't necessarily leave it up to a machine. You know, they sell a machine that you just put it on and it'll make or buy and sell for you and stuff like that. That's not, it means the guy who's selling the machine, that's just straight business. Right? That. But better you know what you're doing. Does that make sense? Street singers and dancers are being referred to here. They may gain the subsistence from street performance, but at the same time, may also be involved in thievery or using their position as the front for burglary. Hmm. You know, so you don't know. They may be bona fide, you know, street dancers, but much of the time, these are the ones that do all these things. So that better they're not around, you know. If such persons who are secret thieves dwell in the realm of a king, they constantly harass the good subjects by their forbidden practices. So that's the point. Finding secret thieves. Mm. They don't look like thieves, but they are. Mm. In a former kalpa, this vice of gambling has been seen to cause great enmity. A wise man, therefore, should not practice it, even for amusement. Right? So the kshatriyas can, but you see, who's getting into the biggest problem? Kshatriyas, right? You know, Yudhishthira lost the empire. Right, you know, so that's no joke. You know, mm-hmm. Nala also lost. Mm-hmm. Right, so these are the examples on why you shouldn't even just for amusement do it.
Why do they do it?
They're in the mode of passion. They do these things.
So it's basically
like, why is anybody stupid?
So, yes, but
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but so it's simply that their occupation and the lifestyle that comes with it is so intense that they just take liberties, and then the karma, that's their thing.
It's there, it's just one of the ways to, you know, as it says, is entertainment. Mm. Means they wouldn't do it as an occupation.
No, no.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're professional gamblers, they know what they're doing.
Are they Vaishya?
What?
Professional gamblers or sutras?
Worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point is they know how to hold the dice, and they throw it with that, they know what it'll come up, because they sit there and practice all. That's all they do. So they know how it works.
Deal from the bottom.
Yeah, they know all these things. So the point is now they have all those things out to stop professional gamblers, mm. right? Because it should be you're an amateur when you walk into a casino. If you're a professional, they ban you.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, someone who's actually good and they can tell he knows a technique, then they'll ban him from all the casinos. Like that, because it's because, you know, house may win, but they win over the house, so therefore, you know.
Can't have that.
Yeah, in other words, the bigger thieves get rid of the smaller thieves, or at least the more established thieves get rid of the better thieves. You know?
Yeah.
So something happens. Okay. On every man who addicts himself to that vice, either secretly or openly, the king may inflict punishment according to his discretion. Right? In other words, what it will take to get him to stop doing that.
Yeah.
So either by banishing him, if there's the others, or by some other, you know, corporal punishment, whatever will make him, you know, see that this is not a good lifestyle. But those appointed to administrative public affairs, who, baked by the fire of wealth, mar the business of suitors, the king shall deprive of their property. Right, because this point is it's about secret thieves. So then the government officials who, by getting wealth in that, then they've worked their way in and getting things, so he'll just take all their property. Mm. Like that. So that's the thing, because they've gotten their property by secretly stealing it. Forgers of royal edicts, those who corrupt his ministers, those who slay women, infants, or Brahmins, and those who serve as enemies, the king shall put to death. Because these will create the biggest trouble. Because for royal edict, you know, it's not actually by the king, so you can get so much done or cause so much harm. Right? Those who corrupt his ministers, because they're running the government. So if you corrupt the ministers, then, you know, it's just not, it ruins the government. Slaves, women, infants, and Brahmins, that's just not done. You know, so then they should be removed. And those who serve as enemies, because then, again, they can bring down the kingdom. And because king government falls, then all the people aren't protected. So these kind of things, and they'll just be put to death. There's not other things. Other things you might, you know, get some corporal punishment or banishment or this or that. You know, or here you have all your property taken away. But other than that, nothing happens to him. But he takes his property away. He starts from zero. You know, he won't give him a position in his government. So now he'll have to go out and get a job. Right? But for these ones, then they're just put to death because they'll destroy the kingdom. Yes.
That last one is spies, is it? Those who serve as enemies?
Basically.
In this context, is corporal punishment the same as capital punishment?
No. Corporal just means it's physical.
Physical.
Yeah, physical punishment.
All right.
And capital, that means
Yeah.
That's more
the big one.
How you say more permanent. It's still naimittic because you'll take birth again, but it's a bigger naimittic. Okay, so then now here again it says topic 18, but we just said here topic 8. Oh, legal title 8.
Title 18. Mm. Next topic 18.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, so that means the legal titles are finished, and then you go back to the 25. Okay. Makes sense. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama.